Hello and welcome to Bastards and Broken Things, a podcast dedicated to House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones, and A Song of Ice and Fire, brought to you, of course, by the lovely people at Fan Critical. Every week we come to you, our lovely listeners, straight after watching the latest episode, and we give you our unfiltered, unsullied thoughts on said episode and what our initial reactions are. Now, as you all know by now, I could not do this alone. Throughout the history of Westeros, there have been many knights and lords who have relied upon their squires. Dunk had Egg, Tyrion and Brienne had Pod, and I have little Gareth. Hello, little Gareth.
Hello, little Len. Yeah.
Large Len, if anything.
Yes, from my perspective, maybe. Average Len to everyone else. I would say that, you know, yes, there's a clear power dynamic in all those examples you gave. We're more like a Robb Stark and Jon Snow, you know, equals.
Which one of us is, anyway, we won't get into spoilers for Game of Thrones, but you know, anyway.
Ned Stark's come up a few times, I remember.
Oh, we just spoil everything. If you haven't watched Game of Thrones, what are you doing listening to this? And go back and watch that.
Yes.
Okay? Yeah?
Yes.
All right. Anyway.
That one's actually good.
Yeah.
No, just kidding.
Well.
Just kidding.
Obviously, last week, we sort of across the whole board of everyone involved in the podcast felt that it was the weakest episode last week.
It was rubbish.
Of the season. And we highlighted why we felt so. And we highlighted like several things. It made no sense for characters. Like, you know, Rhaenys not burning them all at the end made zero sense. Zero. And like, it's become a thing on the internet. It's not just us that think it is a thing. So I want to get your thoughts on this episode though, Gareth, and whether they have returned to form. Episode 10, titled The Black Queen. Of course, we cannot score this episode. That is saved for the deep dive. But what are your initial thoughts on this episode?
Watching this one has made me even more confused about last week's episode. Like,
yeah,
it's almost like it was a different show. It was different people involved in writing it and creating it.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
In a way, it's almost like a similar setup, you know, like last week was kind of the reaction to the news of Viserys within the Red Keep, right? And then this one is the reaction to that and the initial kind of crowning of Aegon within the halls of Dragonstone. And so there is that kind of that similarity in terms of, obviously they're different places, but in terms of the setup, right? They handled it so differently. It's mad. Like the start of this episode, I mean, we'll get onto it in more detail shortly, but the way that it was done, it just felt so kind of anxiety inducing. Like I was like, oh my God, what is happening? I felt breathless watching it. And the characterization of everybody, the development of everyone as an individual character and somebody that you care about it's night and day how that was handled.
Yeah. Chalk and cheese.
Chalk
and cheese. And for any, you know, book readers out there, blood and cheese. That's for another season. But what I will say is, I can't agree more. I can't believe this is the same show.
Yeah.
Anyone who was defending last week's episode and said it was good, what do you think of this episode? You must think this is the best thing ever made.
Because
compared to what was... Yeah, compared to what was shown last week, like, I actually give a fuck about the characters in this episode.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, some people might say that, oh, they had, this episode's got the big set piece at the end. And yes, it does. And it is amazing. But the last episode, in my opinion, the Green Council scene where they're deciding how to basically commit treason and how they're going to do it methodically is one of the best things in the book, and it's one of the things they could have adapted the best, and they fucked up the whole episode by doing these random things that just didn't need to be expanded upon.
And little like Xena warrior princess style adventures. Like
both episodes could have been fantastic, because like you said, one's on the greens and one's on the blacks, and it's all this self-contained thing, and it's like that air of, oh, what's going to happen? You know, we don't know what the other side is thinking kind of situation. That's really interesting. And this episode was just everything about it, the way it was shot, the music was absolutely haunting
unreal.
And fantastic.
The music was so good.
I thought the music in this episode was the best of the season by a mile. It made me uneasy. It was beautiful. It was tragic. Mm. It was scary. It had everything in there. The way it was this episode was shot was completely different to last week's. Like lots more character-driven moments of no dialogue, just looking at characters, which I felt was very powerful.
We have criticized that in the past, but yes, this is very different to the funeral.
This was good. Yeah. This was good. Let's just jump right into some hot takes, because you know we can't score the episode, but I'll tell you right now, listener, this is easily the best episode of the season. Hot take number one, and this is going to sound like a negative, but in some ways it's a positive, but in some ways it's a negative, so just bear with me, dear listener. Mm-hmm. How much is too much with these labor scenes? Now I think by my count we've had 4 birth scenes this season now. 3 of which have been very, very hard viewing. And I'm all for the realism of, you know, understanding, like trying to get across that point that childbirth is at this time in this world or whatever, in this setting is perilous. It's, you know, it's there. It's the woman's battlefield, you know, Gareth. They said that in the first episode. Yeah. That's their battlefield because it's as deadly as war. But it was, this was probably the one that went the furthest. And, you know, I got quite emotional watching this because some of the visuals were just too much for me, my, you know, sensibilities these days. But at the same time, you know, I'm trying to make this sound like a positive as well. I felt it was very effective.
So this is my issue with it, is I'm not sure what it added. I know what you're saying. This is reality, and reality is that you're almost a coin toss in terms of deciding what the outcome of childbirth is in this setting, right? And it's brutal, and that is a reality, and it's a tough thing. But I don't get what it added to this episode to see that. I think this is too much, and I don't think, I mean, fuck, it's definitely changed since having a kid. It affected me so much more than I think I've ever been affected by anything like that on TV. I thought this was too much, and I was disappointed it was shown. Like, I thought poor form, poor choice. And I thought, you know, I'm sure this will have like relevance, and maybe it does, maybe it's representing something, or
it does.
Or it's
and it is
symbolic, but, you know. But I don't need to see it. I don't think we need to see it.
In the book, and I'll go into it in the deep dive with John, we'll talk about this miscarriage, or you know, stillbirth, in more detail, and how it relates to events that are going on simultaneously, and how, you know, we're not saying there's magic involved or anything like that, Gareth, but you know, Targaryen's magic is sort of bound to their blood.
Sure.
And it's quite interesting how when certain events happen, sometimes tragic events happen as well. They're very in sync with certain things. So we'll get into that on the deep dive, because, you know, we've got a lot to get through. Do you want to go for the next hot take, for hot take 2, Gareth? You want one from your little list?
Yeah, all right. This is from the very start of the episode, but will also take us immediately to the end, I think. But I will say this, I had that sinking feeling as soon as the episode started that the old Lukey boy was doomed.
Poor old Lukey boy.
He's a lovely kid, such a sweet boy, sweet prince. And
yes,
him standing there being a bit scared and, you know, not wanting Driftmark, and his mum being just a nice mum.
Yep.
I was like,
wholesome,
fuck,
wasn't it?
He's gone. He's a goner.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I think, you know, Jacaerys, Lucerys, and even little Joff, we haven't heard a word from yet. They come across as the sweet ones, don't they? They're called the strong boys, but they're very sweet and they're very earnest, and they feel like those sort of characters that you really root for, you know, like the Starks.
Yes.
Or, you know, like they've got those honourable qualities, and unfortunately in this world that doesn't always mean that you make it through. So yeah, it's tragic because it's just, you know, we'll get on to the end of the episode, but yeah, that is it was heavily signposted throughout this episode. Yes. That something was going to happen to him, like, you know, I don't think anyone got to the end of the episode and was like, oh my goodness, I didn't see that coming. I think they were like,
yeah,
you know, oh, I knew that. Like, even Mel, when she was watching it, to me, turned to me and goes, well, he's not coming back, is he?
Yeah.
And I said, I didn't know what to say to that. I was like, just, can you just watch the episode, please?
I think I will question the wisdom of sending him.
You got to think, and this is what's really interesting from, and we'll get into it now, I guess, from her perspective, the Baratheons are, it's not even a question of their loyalty. So, because they share blood with the Targaryens, the Baratheon house is, you know, they on Princess Rhaenys' side. And Boros Baratheon, you know, we even saw her at his court earlier this season, like years ago. I'm talking like 15 years ago in the timeline. There's no question in their mind. They're just like, yeah, just go check these guys are all right. That's why she sends him there, because she's so confident.
Maybe she should have also said, surprise, just as a heads up, if you see a massive dragon when you're there,
leave.
Just leave.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But also she thinks she might have bought them some time, because she said, look, I'll give King's Landing a message tomorrow kind of situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, true.
So there's a lot of play here. But also, you know, the kids want to get involved, and they're not kids. In this world, you know, they're, you know, 16 and 14-ish years old. I mean, the age question again. But that's, you know, some kids are getting knighted at that age. You know, Daemon was a knight at 16, Jaime at 15. You know, that they step up in this world, you know what I mean? So it's good to send them. I just think, obviously, tragedy strikes. Well,
send him with someone then. Like, I mean, it is a bizarre solo mission. Like, there is no need for him to be on his own. He could have had to...
Well, they're confident with the dragon situation, yeah, aren't they? I mean, Arax is tiny.
He's a little...
So I'll go on to hot take three, and which is about Rhaenyra showing restraint. And I've put here that she's a much more measured leader than rapey Aegon and the Greens.
Rapey Egg.
All
hail rapey Aegon, the first of his name.
Aegon the Raper. Yeah. That's what you should call him. Jesus Christ. You know, it's. I've put here that if events hadn't happened at the end of the episode, the whole history of the Targaryen race Targaryens might have gone differently. Even though Daemon is thirsty boy for war, I've written in my notes, and he
thirsty
is
boy.
Thirsty.
He is thirsty.
I really like Rhaenyra in this episode. I think she's so on point. She speaks like a good leader. She commands respect. She even like quells Daemon and his war lust. I thought she was fantastic. I thought, you know, I think, once again, if you compare Rhaenyra's character to that of Alicent, and now I think Olivia Cooke's doing a great job as Alicent, but Rhaenyra's character to me feels, I understand her,
yes,
I know her. Even after the events at the end of this episode, at this stage in the story, I am behind whatever she chooses to do. And that to me is good writing. I understand her character. Like, she's not going to randomly do something. Like, obviously, war's going to break out now because of what happens at the end. But I expect that. Like, that's just fucking normal. They killed her son.
Yeah.
Like, and it was meant to be, you know, just treating with people. It's just messenger. So that end shot of her where she looks determined reminds me a lot of Midsommar, Gareth. Like, the end shot of Midsommar. But instead of smiling, she's, like, fucking raging. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With Florence Pugh. Yeah, so I really like Rhaenyra this episode. You reckon? You like her?
Yeah, she's awesome. I did write, one of my hot takes was just Rhaenyra's look at the end. Like,
yeah,
it's on.
Yeah. Oh, it's on. It's on now. You killed a sweet boy.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
And he's such a sweet boy.
But sweet summer child.
He really is. But yeah, she's ace. I do think Damon had a point. Like, come on. I think you maybe implied that potentially she was just trying to buy time when she said, "You'll have my answer tomorrow." But I think yeah, actually she was considering it. Like, she's considering going, do you know what?
Oh, definitely. I think there's a part of her that's like, you know, trying to be the good leader. And I'm not going to say, you know, what happens in the future or anything like that, but, you know, her characters change and they evolve and they, you know, situations shape who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I will say that, look, I think war's inevitable. I think she just doesn't want to do the first strike. Because it's the same with anything that in the history books that will go down as, you know, their fault. Do you know what I mean? War's probably coming, yeah, but we're not going to fucking make the first blow.
No, but
do you understand? We are trying to be of reason here.
I get that. But, and, you know, whatever, like in the future, whatever, from she's justified in doing whatever, right? Like, they killed her son. And
yeah,
I do think that if that hadn't happened, there is a strong chance that she would have sent a raven and said, "Yeah, all right, no worries, King Egg, enjoy it," right? Because yeah, she wants to protect the realm, and to do that, she'll take a step back. And I think that's a step. I think that's too far. I think that is too far in terms of restraint.
It's one of those we'll never know.
No, I suppose not.
Quite, you know, one of those, she might have, but. Unfortunately, events transpire where that doesn't happen. So that will lead us on to the next hot take, Gareth, which is, I'm sure it's on your notes as well, so I'm just saying it for you. okay. It's our first dragon battle. Now, I have been worried for some time that this show might fail when it gets down to the dragon fights, because the CG at times has been bad, I think, personally, and I think they need to put more money into it, and I think they need to put more time and care into it. I think it's looked a bit stunted and fake when they're riding the dragons. But my fears have been eased.
Do you think they...
With this absolutely fantastic dragon battle.
Do you think they scaled up the budget? Ooh,
I would say that is a very good pun.
Thank you.
And I'm trying to think of another one.
Yep.
And I can't.
Something.
If John was here, he'd be here.
Something about fire.
He'd be here. What about fire and that?
Maybe they fired the old CG. Anyway, carry on.
You know, good, that one. Yep. Yeah, anyway. Good. It's good as well. I thought this looked so much better than my imagination. I knew this was coming.
Yep.
When me and John alluded to why we think this episode could automatically be brilliant, it's because of this whole scene. Mm. And everything about it is amazing. Now, Vhagar looks fucking massive. And I've written in my notes Godzilla-like.
Mm.
Like, like with the lightning and stuff, it's like that reveal like of the new Godzilla movie before it goes to shit with all the other monsters. But like where you wait like half the movie to see Godzilla.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then when you see it, like, oh my fucking God, it is massive.
Yeah.
And him... Vhagar, because it's a girl dragon.
A girl dragon.
Biggest in the world.
That one's a gill dragon.
that one's a girl, isn't it? You checked its bits. No, it's just a girl, isn't it? it looked amazing coming through the lightning and the smoke and the clouds.
Yeah.
It was just terrifying. Yeah. I thought it was terrifying. Yeah. And poor little Arax.
Oh.
Didn't stand a fucking chance.
Torn into bits.
I messaged John, actually, and I said, I thought the dragon getting mushed into bits was a bit much, wasn't it? He goes, well, what do you think was going to happen? And I was like, yeah, but it's a bit much, wasn't it?
that was hard to watch. There was a bit of me that was like, they didn't show Lucaris. Maybe he's just swimming around. Maybe he'll swim to safety.
Oh, what? Yeah, from that height. I think they find his body in the book. Or is it one that they don't recover? I can't remember. There was a question like, how did they know that he's dead? Do you know what I mean? There's that sort of question.
Quick question for you.
Go with it.
Obviously, Damon goes and does a bit of dragon hunting himself and finds a fucking massive one. Do we know who that
Vermithor.
Is?
Vermithor.
Vermithor.
The second largest dragon in the world. Ooh. The old dragon of King Jaehaerys. And the thing that people don't realize, we'll get into this as a deep dive, is Dragonstone is actually a place where just
dragons
who have had hang out. Yeah, they've had no rider for a while. Their old rider might have died.
An orphanage.
Or there are some dragons who are just wild and haven't been tamed or claimed yet. So the blacks being on Dragonstone is a huge advantage if they can tame some of these dragons. It's interesting that Daemon's trying to tame Vermithor because he's already got Caraxes. So I'm interested to see how that develops. But yeah, that's a good question, guys. What did you think about, this is the last point and it's still on the hot take, but what did you think about Aemond essentially killing Lucerys by accident? What do you think about that?
I mean, yeah.
Because he's like, oh, Vhagar,
stop
Vhagar, it. Vhagar, no, listen to me, Vhagar. Listen to my bidding.
It makes me think, I'm starting to find Aemond a little less cool than I did after we first saw him as Big Aemond. Do you know what I mean?
The sapphire thing was cool.
The sapphire thing was fucking cool. That was wicked. I was like, what? That's mad. That's so cool.
Looks awesome.
Why has he got a patch on? Just keep that out all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Surely.
Yeah.
But I don't. To me, the impression that he gave, you know, when you and I were like raving about him, like we sort of fell in love with him a bit, as an excellent kind of evil character. But the impression that he gave initially to me was that he was super unbelievably in control and measured and had everything planned out. That's what it seemed like. Like he knew what was going to happen. And I'm just getting the sense now that that's not the case. He's tried to be a little bellend and it's gone out of control. And then rather than being sort of launching into it and being like, yeah, whatever, I'm Aemond, I can do what I want. He's like, oh no, come on, stop it, dragons. And he just came across a little bit lamer than I've thought of him.
We'll get on to the deep dive about why it's, whether or not it's an accident or, how that relates to his character in the book and all that sort of stuff, because I think it's very interesting what they've done here. I think, to make this seem like an accident for me makes it, look, it doesn't just diminish from the episode. I love the episode. It's amazing. It just annoys me with Aemond's character because make him ruthless.
Yeah,
like, he's just
exactly.
killed this kid.
Exactly.
Right? That is him. That's fine. You don't have to make, he's a complex character, but he's not, you don't have to make him so complex. Oh, I didn't want to do that. Like, no, you've been wanting to kill that kid for like 10 years.
Exactly.
Genuinely.
Exactly my point.
And you would have, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So just go with it. Have the confidence to go, no, Aemond is that character. That's okay. That is okay. We are allowed to like evil characters. Not every character has to have a shred of decency for us to cling on to. Do you know what I mean? There's characters we love to hate. Cersei, Joffrey, These other characters, you know, Ramsay, they're fantastic characters. And some people love the scenes with those characters in them, you know, yeah. but they hate the characters. Yeah. That's okay. Anyway, we'll get onto that more in the deep dive. But I thought, you know, as is, you know, tradition, we come to you with our unsullied thoughts. But overall, I think we both agree this is a fantastic episode.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And wow, really excited for season two now. So happy to put last week's episode behind us and be on the front foot. The gas pedal is down and we are accelerating into the Dance of Dragons, which I think we can safely say has now officially begun. I want to thank my trusty squire Gareth for joining me on this hot take. He will be in the deep dive as well this week. We're going to have all of us in there, hopefully. And that will be out in the next few days. And we'll get into all of these juicy tangents there. Thank you, dear listener. And we will catch you in the deep dive. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.